listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
We're not doing it. Okay, well, I thought that we were just telling people to tell people about the show. Anyway, this is 90S. If you like the show, tell people about it. What do we talk about?
We start by talking about the financial crisis, by getting COVID up in our biz, when we talk about Sex and the City 2, the best movie ever, and then we laugh at Disney+.
We then go on to discuss some movies like Sonic the Hedgehog and Rampage and Konami?
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about swords for a really long time.
Guys, this is the most impressive and in-depth conversation about swords that you will hear all week. You know what? The stock market might be in decline, but you can invest in fun by listening to this episode of 90s.
No.
But
that's part of the argument.
Listen, before we talk about swords on this podcast, and we will.
S-words for 500.
And we will talk about swords. Saber. You want to talk about the largest single-day market crash?
That was today.
That was...
Was it 8%? 7.8%?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, full 8% close. Triggered the Wall Street tripwire mechanism.
15 minutes of no trading in the middle of the trading day.
Which apparently saved the day in a big, big, big way. Because when it resumed in 15 minutes, there was a decline, but it wasn't like the bottom ceased to be.
Didn't the market open 4 points lower than it closed?
Yeah.
Something crazy like that. So all this aftermarket bullshit brought down the prices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of... I mean, the main factors are basically that COVID-19 thing that was like kind of putting everything into a slowed down mode and like a bunch of recession stuff. And then Saudi Arabia decided to just slash the bottom out of oil prices to get into a price war with Russia.
I heard, though, that it was kind of a play with Russia and Saudi working together to destroy American shale markets.
Apparently, like, the Saudis undercut so hard that it will also damage Russia. Like, it was a 34% price cut on the price of crude coming out of Saudi, which is...
Boy, that's horrible. They also upped production, I think, in response to this whole crisis, which all the analysts are like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's so super, super, super shady. It's the it's the largest single-day drop in crude since 1991.
Right. They're under $30 a barrel.
Yeah, and it has dropped to, like, a price of, like, lower than it was, like, 4 or 5 years ago. So chopping off, like, other downturns and stuff. So, craziness.
Can we just agree now that Alberta, we told them? Like, we told them this was going to happen?
Don't put everything in oil, guys. Done.
And then this happened, and now they're like, damn. Big, flat province. Put up fucking wind turbines. Just do it.
Yeah, that also catches all of the air falling over the Rockies, right?
They have
the Chinooks, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Just sit there and like...
Yeah, but the tar
blow electricity.
But the money, the big money tar sands.
Yeah, they had all that money. They could have just started spending it on windmills.
But hold on. They never had any money because they never collected any taxes, right? If they had been clever, somewhere along the way, they would have collected taxes for these periods of drought in their mono economy.
Mm-hmm.
But they did not do that.
Yep.
Yeah, so the money is all gone.
They didn't. But I mean, hey, maybe it'll like shut down the Trans-Pacific pipeline. Because you're like, whatever, it's worthless now.
Yeah, we can hope.
If it runs Russia out of the oil biz, yeah, it's so nuts.
Yep,
it's crazy.
It's okay. The American politics will sort this right out.
Well, my understanding is that both Russia and Saudi Arabia were staunch allies of America, so I don't understand why any of this is happening at all. I've seen the leader of the Americas talk about his love of the leaders of those two countries, and the great deals he signed with them. So how could possibly any of this be happening? I guess if you jump into conspiracy mode, like, what does that even mean? Like, because it doesn't bode well for, like, Republican voting well, like, right? Like, if the market falls out late in the term of the presidency, when there's, like, kind of that general understanding that, like, your presidency...
Okay, so you got to go into the supranational organizations when you want this level of conspiracy.
I'm ready.
I would say that what's going on is that we are seeing... an AI solution to the true intensity of the climate catastrophe that we're about to face. So there is the manufactured disease, which was let loose first to create all kinds of opportunities for population control, because we're in the early stages of this. The lockdown that they have going on in China is going to spread as other countries get it, lock everything down harder and harder and harder, and then
Micronesia has a complete lockdown.
Correct. It'll be much easier for like state militaries.
Sounds made up.
Much easier for state militaries to control population
and execute
huge groups of people. We're all forced into being online, so all of our thoughts are being recorded right now. They're going to know who all of the dissidents are in the next year or two.
I mean,
purge them right the hell out.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah.
I don't care what level of intelligence you are, natural or artificial. Just leave a comment in iTunes.
Listen, I want to put the 200 plus hours of 90S into machine learning, and then just have machines record 90S for us. I'm sure they probably could. They're just like yelling about like Star Wars and Marvel movies and whatever.
Uh-huh. We'll just take whatever is the counter opinion to whatever is popular, and that'll be all right.
We're just fine. Yeah, I mean, the whole manufactured virus thing, though, is it doesn't necessarily even need to be that extreme to still be effective, right? Like, there was, like, the marked decline in, like, greenhouse gas emissions or whatever.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's the same, but it doesn't even need to necessarily be the whole we're rounding people up into kill camps. Like, you'd be, like, shutting down supply chain, slowing down industry, and almost certainly slowing down reproduction, just, like, as it is. It doesn't even need to be... like popping off.
Well, the important one is executing all the people in the 60 plus who are drains on the economy and aren't producing.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. But like that's your like your
and
your,
voting for Trump
and voting for
that's
Trump.
Your fast forward state. But I was like, but if there's just like active viruses and quarantines just kind of on for like let's say the next 10 years, like that without even executing everybody would still have a marked decline on the population. I feel.
Why would that be?
Why would that be? Because I'm sure a ton of people aren't looking to bone when they're all up in influenza mode.
So you're telling me that if you got locked into this apartment your girlfriend for the next year, you wouldn't bone a whole bunch?
But if you get the virus takes care of that problem and kills the baby.
Not you. No, none of the babies are being affected. Oh, this thing was engineered. No, nobody under 60 or whatever has died from this thing yet.
Huh. Well.
My favorite part is this, is the health minister of Iran.
Oh, yeah, he's laws.
Doesn't he have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then was coughing on television saying it's no big deal.
He got it, and then went on a media tour saying it's not a big deal.
Coughing all over.
While he was infected, all over the TV hosts, and then infected half of the Iranian cabinet because he was meeting with all the other ministers.
Amazing.
Well, it's the same thing deal with France or whatever, right? Well, they put a ban on, like, kiss-to-kiss, cheek-to-cheek kissing or whatever else like that. But then people were like, Macron did that 3 days ago to the Italian prime minister. like, stop telling us not to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah. France is under a mitigation lockdown or whatever it is.
Whatever. They need a total lockdown. It's loose in Italy. Italy doesn't have control. Yeah. Pew! It's everywhere. And they're not testing in the States, so it's here for sure.
Yeah. That's
Korea's doing drive-through testing. South Korea.
What does that mean?
You don't get out of your car to get tested.
Really?
You go to a station, you fill out a paper, you go to another station,
man
you hand off the paper,
suit,
you go to another station, yeah. you swab your nose and cheek, and then you drive home.
Awesome.
And they send you the results in the mail in the next 2 days.
I'm gonna take that, America.
Yeah.
And they're
you invented drive-throughs. Like, South Korea perfected it.
Right? And they're just testing thousands of people without fucking putting them all in the same waiting room.
Very smart.
It's so good.
So I was reading this like really interesting thing where they were just like they were talking about how the reaction, like the civilian reaction, is often like either like way too strong or not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's sort of like wild, like varies wildly. And then they were saying that like there's a lot of virologists are like firmly believe that like this is nowhere close to the big one. Than if we're like looking at the mutation of the influenza virus, there's like a real bad one. They say like within the next decade or two,
sure,
is the like virology or whatever. Anyway, so apparently there's a way worse one coming, and they were saying that like between now and then we need to like learn the lessons of COVID-19 on how to be properly prepared and properly react.
Right.
You know, where it's just like when they talk about masks and you're sort of like if as soon as this happens, everybody puts on a face mask, it kind of sucks, but a lot of it gets mitigated because if you're infected, you're not coughing it out. And if you're not infected, you're blocking three of the major orifices for the stuff that could get in your face.
No joke today. I'm working the front desk at my clinic in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Person comes in front of me. I have to ask every patient now, do you have a fever? Do you have a cough today?
Mm-hmm.
And
have you put on a mask? Are you in this place? Mm-hmm. Have you visited any of these places? Have you touched any of these
dromedaries?
Yeah, camels.
Yeah.
Everyone gets it. Not nothing. It's like, hey, you're here for a blood test. Great. Do you have a fever and a cough today? No. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You do? Great. I'm just going to ask you to put a mask on.
Yep.
Woman shows up with a 11, 12-year-old kid. Kid puts his face on my desk and coughs on my hands.
Fine.
So I say,
get out of my house, please.
You have to put a mask on your kid? And she looks at me and goes, no. I'm like, well, your kid's coughing.
Hospital policy.
Like, mask up. And even if it wasn't in the middle of a fucking global pandemic.
Yeah, it's regular flu nonsense. It's like you go to a regular waiting room and they're like, if you have a cough, you usually put on a mask. Yeah. Like, that's normal.
The mom looks me right in the face. She's not sick. She just coughs when she's nervous. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Put a mask on. And she digs in and says, no. So I have to give her papers back and say, go home. Like, we will not serve you if you will not do this.
And what did she do?
Put a mask on the kid. She took the day off work to get some blood tests. But glared at me for 20 minutes. Like, holy shit. Yeah. And you're going to sit in that waiting room with your kid. Don't you want me to do this to the next person who comes in coughing? Like,
that's the whole point. Is you're like, people are like, oh, the masks aren't that effective. And they're like, but they are if everyone's wearing them. Like, that's the
masks are protection.
Yeah.
The masks are containment for people who are infected.
Exactly.
With anything from a cold to COVID-19.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. But and then they were even saying, like, it was like latex gloves and whatever on public places. Like, it does seem like kind of crazy or whatever, but they were like, in the next, like, 10 to 20 years, they're like, we need to come up with that because we need to know, we need to properly know what the correct response to people is. And then they also need to understand how to do it because they were like, if you hear like an air raid siren or whatever, you're not like, that's probably fake. Or if they're like, hurricanes coming, you're not like, fake news. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm like, we need to know what the proper like virus response is because it seems that it's like wildly all over the place, like talking to like people that
work. Because they want to spread it, Keith.
But that's what I'm saying is that I was like, I don't even think that it needs to be. It's just you're, if you overestimate it, I think you're like living in weird bubble boy fear. But if you underestimate it, you're probably.
Do you have food stocks? Do you get like quarantined in here for 2 months? You
have enough food? See, I think that's over preparing.
Having food to eat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over preparing.
I went and got food. And I'm going to eat well if I get.
Well, I know where you live, John. Mm-hmm. John turns us away.
Sex in the City, too, you know?
But yeah.
I wouldn't be without my reasons.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's very funny that like we pretend like not funny, but I think it's like not crazy that you just need to come up with like basically like a we respond correctly to the weather.
I love what you're saying, Keith. But I went to the mall this week.
I know people don't get it.
And I had to use the public washroom, and people still are not washing their hands.
I know it's gross.
It's super gross.
And I'm
it's
like,
super and like. It's always kind of grossed me out, but I was keenly aware of what was going on because I was in the mall this week. And I was like, dude, just wash your hands.
I love also...
There's motion-sensing soap and motion-sensing faucets. You don't have to touch anything. Just wash your hands.
It's gross.
And it's still not happening, regardless of a global pandemic.
Yeah. The other one, too, is like it's opening my eyes to how filthy other things are. When the STM was like, in light of the, you know, COVID-19 outbreak, we'll be washing the metros once a week. And I was like, that's your increased schedule? What's the normal schedule?
18 days, wasn't it?
5 to 6 weeks some metro cars go without getting wiped down.
That's pretty gross.
I was like, no.
I would even say nightly would be okay.
Yeah, like... Yeah. I was like, the fact that they're like their aggressive cleaning schedule of metro cars is once a week. I was like, that still seems too long. Again, COVID notwithstanding, I was like, Sundays is you clean the metros because they just went through a Friday and a Saturday night. Like,
man, I've taken the bus home from some softball games and sat down.
I'm 5 weeks of goo.
I'm like a sweaty motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done that game. That is.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, you know,
and the fact that would be there for 2 months. Not good for anyone.
Yeah, like virus notwithstanding, I was like, once every 5-6 weeks is too long to not be watching the buses and metros. Blech. Anyway.
Swords.
Well, I was going to say, what's the better transition? I was like, from like a virus of mass destruction to blades of mass destruction, or like signs of the end times into Sex and the City?
We want to end positive, okay? So,
so signs of the end times... So, Sex in the City.
Sex in the City too.
Oh, and there's a Saudi what Arabian have, kind what of tie-in-ish.
There sure is.
What have we done to deserve this? Wait, we made this movie.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, I actually wrote down the list of who did. So what we have to thank for this particular abomination, Time Warner, New Line Cinema, HBO Video, HBO boys. What was going on
here?
Yeah,
Sex and the City was their cash cow for a long time.
Village Roadshow Pictures.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Michael Patrick King was the director.
So how much Sex and the City had you seen going into this?
Literally 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So one episode, one time, my mom was watching while I was living with them in Dollard, not in Dollard, in Dorval. Mm-hmm. And then I was playing Warcraft, and I saw about 7 minutes of a single episode to my left. That's about that's my exposure level to this.
So that explains your Sex and the City tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I guess jump in.
So I think it's a celebration of, okay, you can like break it down into all these like elements that you could criticize, and you could there's a lot of criticism to be levied against it. But I think that it's like, ultimately, it's a fantasy that is not for us. And that is like,
kind of like Twilight.
And that there, it is like, if you dissect into its little components, it becomes repulsive. But you could probably perform that same dissection on Conan and the Barbarian and come up with like, he's a mass murderer and he rapes a girl and he punches camels. You know, like there's all kinds of like. But as an aggregate fantasy, you can kind of get into it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the lady gets to marry the rich guy and live happily ever after.
Right, but also gets to be sassy and sexually modern and on her own and whatever. With the support of her besties, who is each like wild and fabulous in their own particular ways. Right? Maybe.
Okay, sounds like it couldn't fail.
So
well, you'd be wrong.
I mean, it still made a bunch of money.
This movie? Like, I think this one in particular, even the Sex and the City fans despise it.
Dislike it, but yeah. It still, I believe, at least made its money back and made, like, it turned a profit worldwide. It fell below expectations.
Right.
Right? It was not the blockbuster of the first one, and I think, like I said, even Sex and the City fans think this one is abysmal.
Yeah.
But it still didn't, like, lose anyone money.
Well,
that's how strong the brand was.
That's pretty surprising. Because, like, I want to get into now the criticism, because the fantasy of it I found, like, repulsive. The characters are, like materialistic to a joyful, horrific degree. And self-absorbed.
Yeah,
and
it made $294 million on a $100 million budget. So it's right. It was not a disaster.
No,
Jesus Christ, people made $200 million. The amount of Serenity?
Yeah. Fuck. That's fucking so sad.
Yeah. So, but was received bad enough that it canceled plans of the third one.
Right.
So
right. So the like for and then maybe it's not fair to do the dissection and criticize all the elements. The big criticism that is fair, you cannot argue with, is that it is so fucking slow and badly paced, and the overarching plot is non-existent. So you're stumbling with these characters from like really long scene to really long scene to really long scene.
So what is the plot though?
So the story is there's these four friends who are, do I have to do the whole?
Well, we know the Sex and the City bit. One's a fashion writer, whatever else like that. But okay, where are they now at the beginning of the movie?
So they're all getting a little older. They're whatever, you know, they're all dealing with their own midlife quote type of crisis kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Samantha ends up with an old boyfriend who's all of a sudden becoming popular because his movie just came out, and then she's at the premiere to the movie. She meets these Saudi rich guys who hire her to be like a influencer kind of, and so he invites them all to come back to, I don't think it's Saudi Arabia,
it's Dubai, no?
Dubai,
yeah.
To go back to Dubai and to live like princesses, and they're going to do some sort of work or whatever. It's like an all expenses paid trip to Dubai. Mm-hmm. And then while they're out there, of course, they all have to face their own conflicts, which is kind of bizarre. They all have their conflicts with their partners, but they leave them and go to Dubai to have their catharsis or whatever, to learn their lessons, and then they go back.
And tell me about the line about Lawrence of my labia.
I actually wrote it down, Lawrence of my labia, at minute 77. So I started
so
writing
you've
down.
You've got the movie. You can skip right ahead
so,
to that.
So basically, it's like a full side story, though, right? Like they leave the confines of the Sex and the City trope, which is the city,
yeah,
and then they just do it in Dubai.
Correct.
Without any of the, like, normal things that like anchor them,
but the thing
so
is
it's like pure fantasy,
yeah.
Like it's even fantasy for these characters,
totally. And it's like a princess fantasy, right? So like they all get off of their plane, and then the sheikh sends four cars. They each get their own car, and they all talk about how great it is to have their own car and their own driver. And then all their like butler guys come out, and they're all scantily clad, muscled men, and they all over the guys. And then they all get in and they go to a hotel, and they're like, oh, of course, you're at the whatever suite, it's $40,000 a night. And it's just like a cavalcade of that, on and on. Oh, you got me the bigger ring. Oh, the whatever. This dress costs so much. It's fucking like nonstop. I just want to, like, the start of the movie, I have these notes. there's like four friends since the 80s. They do the setup. Liza Minnelli, they have a big gay wedding. Okay, mm-hmm. So like two of their friends are really gay. Liza Minnelli shows up and they have like a song and dance number, and then they have a super gay wedding.
She's fun.
I guess with swans and whatever. And then I look at the clock and I'm like, it's been 30 minutes. That's 30 minutes. The intro to this movie is like a montage of the four of them being young together, and then now they're this, and then they have a super long gay wedding. Okay. And then there's...
You're like, is the movie about the wedding?
No. Is the movie... Nope. Now it transitions to, like, another 30 minutes of, like, introducing their relationships with each of their boyfriends and, like, setting up the conflict that they each have with them. So now you're an hour into this thing, and the main plot of the movie has not yet started.
Or it's like still act one.
They're still... Yeah, they're still setting things up, and none of it has been... engaging. You're like kind of horrified at these women who just talk about themselves and their shit all the time and how rich they are and mm-hmm. how disconnected they are from the world. It's like they revel in it. And then there's like, God, there's so much. His old boyfriends show up. It's like a fantasy that none of it was interesting to me, and I was vaguely offended and bored.
Nice.
Yeah.
So then they get to Saudi Arabia.
Okay, so they get to Saudi Arabia, and then they have all of their like helper guys who are all whatever. They're like the main conflict of the movie in the end becomes Samantha continuously disrespecting Arabic culture and flashing her boobs and like wearing short skirts and getting people at cafes pissed off at her, which is like legitimate there. You go to prison for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then she has sex on the beach, gets caught by somebody, and then she gets her like contract with the Sheik canceled because she did that. And then they all have to run back to New York, and that's the end of the story.
So like...
There's no consequences? They break international law or... while abroad and run away.
Is it like played for laughs? Like...
Okay, that's the thing also, is that like her thoughtlessness about a conservative culture, she's and many of the decisions and choices that they make overall in the story is like what you would expect the villain to kind of do. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think it's part of the fantasy that she's going to go and just be sexy, crazy, whatever, and get away with it.
Hmm.
So it is kind of so, played for laughs.
The villain is... Muslim culture?
Well, or the women.
Like Samantha?
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, but or is it that like...
But they're also definitely...
Let me float this out here. Are you saying that upper-class white women are the real villains?
But think about
calling
it...
Calling cops on dudes in Starbucks.
Think about it a little bit as if they were like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, right? And they're all just like self-interested assholes, and they kind of get away with it, and it's funny.
Yeah.
That's kind of this, right?
Sure.
Isn't that the fantasy?
That may be the execution. But okay. Do you believe the intent was to say, hey, you know what's wrong? Arabic culture. Let's challenge that with our sassy heroines.
I actually kind of don't think it was like that. Because it was such a simplistic and stupid portrayal of it. It's like, it's goofy to the point of being cartoony. And so...
But I mean, a show that is essentially, like, if you were going to break it down into two words, would be female empowerment. What would be the mid-aughts?
Yeah, I think that's the failure of the film, is that the show started off under the, like, umbrella of female empowerment, but then ended up with this, and then even the fans were like, what is even this? Like, the characters are just monsters.
Well, it's like the Justice League, right? You start off and you save the city, and then you stop Lex Luthor, and then you stop Darkseid, and then you stop Mageddon. Like, what's the next villain do you take on? So you start off with, like, bad boyfriends, and then you go on to, like, horrible relationships addiction.
Rich and established and all that stuff, so now you take on terrorism.
It's coming back to me now. The horrific climax at a certain point, they're in trouble because she's been flaunting her sexuality around all these men, and then she ends up kind of in the street picking something up, and she's all dazed, and she's sweating, so she's all sexy and whatever. So they flee from a crowd of men who are enraged at them, and get like drawn into a place of safety by these women who are like, they're all wearing hijabs, and they say, no, come in here, we'll protect you, we'll hide you, whatever. They hide them, and then they recognize them as Samantha, because she's not Samantha, Carrie's a writer, right? So they recognize Carrie. You're like, oh, we read your books, we love your whatever. And they all take off their hijabs, and they're all wearing like
Prada
and designer clothing there, and they're like, oh, we're all just as materialist as you, and yay, we all love stuff.
So. Sex and the City 3. We all love stuff.
But
I have nothing wrong with Muslim women enjoying materialism.
Nope.
And that's fine, but
The moral of the film is we're all materialistic.
Right. So, but then the weirdest swerve of them all, and I only went back twice to copy this out, so I might mistake some of the words, but the final image of the film, right, she's been having conflict with her.
Like, just like the voiceover? Like, is it yeah, over, like giving the Carrie's thoughts at the end, kind of like typing over?
Right, while she's snuggling with her boyfriend. Right. Right. Okay, so while movies may be black and white, it's like a running theme that they're watching black and white movies on TV. While movies may be black and white, when it comes to relationships, there are a whole lot of options to explore, and that's where I'm at today. That's the final thing of the movie, okay? And but then the character saying this is a heterosexual woman in a monogamous heterosexual relationship.
From the Western world.
That's right.
Exactly.
That also, like, completely shat on another culture.
Yeah. I mean...
So long as it wasn't throwing gold and silks at her.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I feel that I've learned my lesson, that everybody likes stuff. Do you like things? Do you like things that are fancy?
Anyway,
so does everyone.
I realize I maybe was not 100% fair to this thing, but it was fucking awful.
I mean, dude, we have, like, I feel that we've, like, dissected films from Star Wars that we, like, you know, on the surface are supposed to enjoy. I feel that we don't need to pull punches for Sex and the City 2 if it's truly... If even fans of the franchise can agree that it's crap. I don't see why you need to necessarily... That's why I was kind of
We are established arbiters of film style.
That's
quality.
This is why, I mean, maybe we'll have to circle back with Worst Movie Ever at some point to watch the first one. Because apparently the first one was a better, like, better encapsulated the, like, spirit of the series.
Right.
So maybe, like, to understand how, like, because I'm listening to this, I'm interested in, like, how does that have a fan base? But, I mean, the answer is it doesn't because it like, its own fan base rejected that version of it, right?
Yeah. Like, and maybe these characters are in the caricature phase of character where they're like, like you said, they've resolved all of their conflicts already and there's nowhere to take the story. So they're just like becoming ridiculous versions of themselves.
Yeah, it's like Army of Darkness Ash versus like even that Ash.
Right.
Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
No!
Yeah, it's just stuff like that. But yeah, exactly, that's it. Like, I can totally
so you're saying this would go under John Wick, right. Alien, The Matrix, we're up there.
Well, we can go down to the bottom of the list because it like failed in first off it's like target, but then we can also go way down because it was actively offensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Actively offensive. Actually, start at Tiptoes then.
But yeah, Tiptoes was trying to not be offensive. This one movie doesn't seem that it like cared.
Yeah, no, I think it was having fun with being offensive as part of the fantasy.
Yeah.
Then we go down to this giant paper mache bolt here is actually really heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're into. I feel that the only thing it can possibly be, like, above would be maybe...
Soul Man.
But even then, Soul Man tried to have heart.
Really? Okay.
Like, well, that, like, you know what I mean? Like Soul Man is...
It's a movie about blackface, though.
So I have...
Sure, but at the same time, James Earl Jones is like, do you understand why this makes you the worst person in the world? And, like, this doesn't have that. Like, James Earl Jones showing up at the end of Soul Man being like, you're a monster, and here's the thing.
Like, Maya Angelou showing up at the end of the movie going, what the fuck did you
do? Exactly, that's it. Like, you know, no! No! Just like smacking things like hors d'oeuvres out of their hand.
That's good. I buy that, but I did not see this giant papier-mâché boulder, and I did not see the remake of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right, I mean, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so how do you guys feel about those two? I feel like this could go above Leonard.
It could easily go above Leonard, I'm sure. I would... potentially put it again above the Rocky Horror Picture Show remake because
but probably probably under this giant papier-mâché boulder because at the core of that movie there was an interesting plot that used the accoutrements to be offensive.
The way the plot felt, it felt like it was written by, we have to have these seven scenes in the movie, so we're just gonna like string them together.
Yeah, it's kind
of like if I were going to write one paragraph of this giant papier-mâché boulder describing only the plot, you guys wouldn't be like, that sounds like the worst movie ever.
Yeah.
Right. It's all the stuff that was built up around that skeleton that made it
horrible.
Well, there we go. Below giant papier-mâché boulder, above Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Lucky number 189.
189. Good job, Carrie.
Pending update to the list, I suppose. Yeah. That's exciting.
No.
It's nice to have a good bottom shooter.
Yeah, exactly. Something that, thanks.
Anchor stuff.
I'd like to just point out that I've watched 1, 2, 3, 4 of the bottom 6.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
Leonard
it's because you're more likely to hate the things that you hate. Oh, you guys have thrown trash at me, and I'm like, that's not bad.
Tiptoes?
Soul that Man? Football movie?
Man. That football movie, I hate it. But, like, yeah, Garbage Pail Kids and The Descendants and stuff, that yeah, those were all.
Man, we were off base with The Descendants. I thought it was not going to work so much.
They keep making
harder.
Them. I think it might be a show now. Yeah.
There's three of them, at least. And
they're so
desperate. You have Disney Plus. You should watch them.
Yeah, should. It should.
How is Disney Plus going?
I don't particularly like it.
Yep.
I don't. Especially because when Archer was born, I decided to torrent all the things I liked from my childhood and save them to a 2 terabyte hard drive that plugs into my TV and we can watch whenever. Mm-hmm. So all of the Darkwing Ducks and all of the Disney Afternoon stuff and all the things I thought would be
kid appropriate. Do you guys watch it a lot? Like Disney Plus at all? Or does the lady plug it in? Because I feel that like...
Well, now we use it just because our streaming... Or like we use a Roku for our streaming thing, and it's there, and you don't have to go turn on the
player. That is a service. That are like convenience is a thing.
Yep.
I have, when I used to download movies and stuff like that, I still have hard drives like sitting somewhere with a bunch of movies on. I'd have to really be hard pressed to like plug in that hard drive and watch
it. But it's not that hard. I have to hit input. And then pick up the DVD remote and press
you
play.
You lost me at input.
All right. So, but
it wasn't that big a sacrifice. Plus, all of the Disney movies I had on that hard drive.
What I was really asking was, have they started adding content that is going to make it worth it?
They have not.
Great.
They won't until the end of the year.
The Mandalorian was cool. Yeah. It was for that. The Jeff Goldblum show is not cool.
Really?
Jeff Goldblum show?
Jeff Goldblum does a deep dive on stuff he finds interesting.
Sneakers.
And that would be an amazing YouTube show. But right. At 30 minutes, it is a lot.
Oh, yeah. It is not a show to watch. It's a show to put on while you clean the house or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it is. Even the sneakers one, I was like, I'm super interested in this subject. And I like Jeff Goldblum's weird nuance stuff.
It really lives and dies by the delivery of Jeff Goldblum.
And
though.
Does it die?
It dies. It dies. It's too much Jeff Goldblum. It's like
you gotta dial licking, it back, Jeff.
Licking the salt dish. Like, right. Just, well.
So...
yeah, I don't like it. Riss is the one who's paying for it, so
there you go. She and I mean, whatever. They just brought out the final season of Clone Wars or whatever.
Is also yeah, like, man, the I cannot
new,
catch up.
The new final. Did you also see that they have the Clone Wars Essentials? Which I have not watched any Clone Wars, but I did. I've tried. Interested in that though, because they have a playlist on Disney Plus called like Clone War Essentials, which is like watch these like. 30 or so episodes.
How many are there?
Like 100
seven seasons?
Yeah. Seven seasons?
It just keeps going.
Seven seasons running 20 episodes each.
Woo!
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. Like they I am into that playlist because I was like, everybody says it's cool.
Yeah.
And
it's a slog.
Yeah, exactly. But so
Rebels is supposed to be good.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to get into it. Archer's not super interested
DuckTales
in it.
DuckTales season 2 is great.
DuckTales season 2 is great.
Mm-hmm.
Gravity Falls is there. If you guys haven't watched that,
that's on Gravity Falls to do after DuckTales.
Yeah, Gravity Falls wraps up beautifully. It ended so nicely.
Wait, it also ended. Yeah. Right, the showrunner was like, "Ended." Speaking of DuckTales,
woo!
Voice of Huey or Dewey, the blue one. It's also the voice of a blue hedgehog.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Sonic movie?
No, but Scott did.
Yep.
Get out.
Yeah. I watched the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Dr. Robotnik was
Jim Carrey.
How did he go?
All right. The short review. It was fun for the whole family. All three of us watched it. All three of us liked it. And we're entertained with it from start to finish.
Yeah. Scott and I were talking about this a little before when you came in. Mm-hmm. Like everything I've heard about
Jim Carrey is
He's like Masky.
He's prime Jim Carrey. He's Jim Carrey in the mask. He's
good for him.
Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura without the horrible transphobia. Like
yeah.
It's nice.
The review that was a weird.
It's hard to go back and be like, wait, that's not okay.
Yeah. Looking at you, plot of Chasing Amy. For stuff that doesn't age well, stuff that I enjoyed at the time, but then you're like, oh no, Ace Ventura's up there and Chasing Amy's up. Pretty up there, too.
Yeah, Ace Ventura is way further up there.
Oh, though, yeah.
Because that's an actual villain that all of the characters, all of the characters in the movie
yeah.
show immediate disgust to.
True enough. Yeah. But
right? Like, yeah. They're like, that movie is funny. Wait, no.
Then you
all...
remember the crying game scene
and they all start throwing up. They find out one of the characters is trans. Yeah. Just like,
wow.
But yeah, the thing about the Jim Carrey performance that I read, I was telling Scott about, was they were just sort of like, it would be one thing in 2020 to see Jim Carrey do Ace Ventura 3, and then you'd be like, oh, Jim's like lowering himself. But they were like, in the guise of, or like in the auspice of a children's film, as an adult, you can enjoy watching that late 90s, early 2000s Jim Carrey
right.
without necessarily feeling like he has diminished himself as a performer by like returning to that. Because you're like, oh, he's playing it up for kids. But as an adult who enjoyed yeah, yeah. The Mask and stuff, it's like it's a guilt-free way to watch the new Jim Carrey zaniness.
It's great. He's not on the screen so much for you to be annoyed by it.
I mean, it's just like a Hedgehog.
Yeah, it's just like a nice, oh yeah, Jim Carrey can do that stuff, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's also completely self-absorbed, his character.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hysterical in its own way. Like, he comes on and is convinced he's smarter than everyone else in the room. So when shit goes wrong, or like he's lecturing James Marsden's character, the good guy cop buddy, mm-hmm. and he's, I'm so smart, I'm a genius. You know, I was spitting out formulas while you were still spitting up formula. And then James Marsden punches him. And he's like, what? It was great. It's just a delightful thing.
Sonic looks cool. Is he fast? Does he go fast?
Gotta go fast.
Does he?
Sonic goes fast.
Oh, nice.
He's funny. The pitch meeting about this makes reference like, oh, did you see X-Men Days of the Future Past?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that Quicksilver scene
happens
three or four times.
But I mean, that's
his biz. Okay.
Exactly. It would be like, guess what? If they made a Quicksilver movie, that's his power. Yeah. His power is being fast.
There's lots of meta jokes in it, and it delivered on a good kids video game movie, hard to come by.
So they puffed up the plot into a weird thing, right? Like they gave him a
from a world where that is not our world.
Yeah,
where he is in danger. There's bad guys after him.
Because like he has the Speed Force. They also like I feel the game's never really.
I thought he just kidnapped animals and replaced them with robots.
I mean, that's Robotnik's deal.
Yeah.
But I'm like, Sonic never really seemed to be, other than the fact that Sonic the Hedgehog was the fastest thing in this world, they didn't ascribe like a power to it. And this is very much like he has like a power inside of him,
and he has to escape his world and hide out. And he
like
comes
a speed
to Earth.
Like Flash.
Yeah, he reads a bunch of Flash comic books in his spare time. That's like a thing that happens.
Okay, but like, what do you mean? He reads a bunch of comics in the spare time? Like, so he like 1 second and reads them all?
Yep. So and then does it over again, and then does it over again. Like, he hides out on Earth for 10 years without being seen and, like, stalks a small Midwestern American town.
But in a cute way.
Uh-huh. In a cute way. Because he's
like Sting?
He's a little blue alien.
Uh-huh.
And he kind of protects them.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then he does something stupid, and the government notices him, and they send Dr. Robotnik to investigate the weird blue energy thing that happened in this Midwest town.
Hmm.
And hijinks ensue.
So he's a G-Man.
He's an above G-Man. He comes in and belittles the U.S. military people who are in charge of the investigation.
He's like the Men in Black.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
But also a kind of a dick. So.
Well, I mean.
Like Tommy Lee Jones.
So an important question.
Yep.
Does Sonic run a loop-the-loop? Because if he doesn't, what are we even doing?
Does he run a loop-de-loop?
Because I see a lot of
does turn into a ball a few times,
yeah.
So that's okay.
Because I saw a lot of trailers, and I was like, this trailer seems to be devoid of loop-de-loop, and Sonic the Hedgehog is often about loop-de-loops. It's weird that they didn't, like... I thought, here's what I thought they were going to do, was at the very least have him, like, in some sort of a highway tunnel run the, like, shh, like, around the roof.
He can run up walls.
I get it. I know he runs up walls. I see him running up plenty of walls. I'm saying that Sonic the Hedgehog, the game, is about loop-de-loops.
I don't think it's about loop-de-loops.
Every level has a loop-de-loop.
I mean, I don't remember the last time I've seen a loop-de-loop.
I literally played Sonic Mania this year.
No, I don't mean
outside.
I mean outside.
Yeah.
I don't
see a lot of those.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you could do it in a what do you call it? You could do the Men in Black thing in a tunnel, right? Like in a subway tunnel, he could have run around the loop-loop.
Sure. But no, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, fail. Bottom of the list. Where's Olivia? Yeah.
Where? So where does this thing go? You sound overall positive about this.
Seems like in Chappie Zone. Yep. Like, I'm hearing Chappie Zone.
What's around Chappie there?
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. In the Tall Grass. Lost World, Jurassic Park.
Down a little bit.
Down a little bit. We get to Ocean's 8. Bad Times at the El Royale. Ant-Man and the Wasp. Venom.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. I like that.
Above?
Above or below?
Below. Yeah. Below Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Were you ever a big
but
Sonic
very,
guy?
Very similar. Was not a big Sonic guy, but it's impossible to avoid Sonic in my life.
I think that Sonic finally gets
and
a win.
Jim Carrey
nice.
Is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sonic needs that win.
It's been a while, buddy.
Like I said, the Mario Brothers movie is a huge trash fire. Doom's a big...
You mean with Leguizamo? Yeah. And,
the Bob Rock Hoskins. Movie doing the Doom was terrible.
And
Double Dragon, Dennis Street Hopper. Fighter. Those are, like, bad movies. And
I think the only thing that came into mind when we were talking about this earlier was, like, Tomb Raider, where you were like, that was fine. Like, the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
What?
Mortal Kombat? That one was pretty fun.
No.
It's similar to Mortal Kombat in that, like, you get it. This is a movie about Mortal Kombat, and they have the characters, and the characters are the characters from the video game.
Are there any? Is there like a post-credit tease or whatever? Does any expanded universe stuff, like I guess Tails, Knuckles?
There are two post-credit sequences.
Oh.
One of them is Jim Carrey, Dr. Robotnik.
That's in the real Dr. Eggman kind of thing?
Well, he gets trapped somewhere where his hipster side fade... curly mustache has given way after months of isolation into the giant Robotnik mustache, and he shaves his head with a rock and is bald and is extra crazy. Mm-hmm. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end of the credit sequence, another portal opens up and Tails shows up looking for Sonic.
Yeah, no Knuckles, though.
That's fine.
Gotta save
one at a time. Knuckles only showed up in 3, man.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Tails showed up in 2, Knuckles in 3.
Mm-hmm. And then he was the best playing in the game.
Fun fact about Sonic the Hedgehog. Did you know he has 3 different animated series?
I bet. I mean...
Like, it's been 20 years? 25 years?
Well, since Sonic the Hedgehog, put 30 on that biz, man. Early 90s, for sure. Yeah. Like, Sonic 1? Like...
91?
Gotta be.
Because it was, like, just as the Sega Genesis. Master System was dying, just at the start of the Genesis.
It was one of the...
Yeah. They backported it, though. There was a Master System version of it.
Hmm.
Yeah. But... Yeah, 3 cartoons? Like, Legend of Zelda hasn't had that many cartoons.
Zelda? I guess they just had...
the one on the back Sonic half of Super like Mario Brothers
Sonic's
Power.
Sonic's kind of a different beast, though. Like, he's sold out in, like, weird ways. Like, there was, like, so much weird cash-grabby stuff. There was a deal with Archie Comics also.
Really?
Yeah. Like the Sonic comics were an Archie offshoot in the 90s and stuff. So I think they sold, like... Nintendo guards the rights to their things, whereas, like, Sega was just like, here you go! And just, like, even before Sega stopped being just a console developer and he became, like, purely proprietary, they would still sell Sonic, like, all over the place.
Poor old Sega, desperate for a buck.
I mean, yeah.
I'm trying to figure when Sonic the Hedgehog came out. Sonic the Hedgehog by Sega. The first film. Yeah, 1991. Mm-hmm. First film. The original work was Sonic the Hedgehog, 1991. So, yeah, coming on 30 years.
Almost.
Yep.
Speaking of video game movies, I really quickly want to talk about the other one I watched last night.
Rampage.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson stars in Rampage.
Rampage.
Or Hobbs and Shaw, except Jason Statham is a giant monkey.
Yeah, he's a giant monkey Statham.
Literally Hobbs and Shaw, because they don't like each other, but they're also best friends.
And they bigger, and they're like, come on, monkey.
And the monkey flips him off. He's like, man, I wish I never showed you that. And then he flips him off again. That's their relationship. The monkey is a jerk. The Rock is his best friend. And then science happens and makes
now
the monkey
big.
Big.
And now we need
to smash up buildings real good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're
speaking of movies that stray too far away.
If you're not familiar with Rampage, you select one of 3 characters.
3 characters.
Which is like Big Wolfman, Big Monkey Man, and Big Lizard Man.
Yep.
And then you climb up buildings and you punch the buildings until they fall down. That is the game. Like 200 levels of that. So,
sometimes tanks show up and try and stop you.
Yeah,
and
helicopters.
Oh, yeah. Tanks show up and try to stop them. They get smashed.
But this is the monkey is the rampage for good, right? It's the other monkey animals are rampaging, and then the Rock special friend monkey.
No, all of them get infected with science.
Uh-huh.
and science makes them big and angry.
Yeah,
and evil scientist says, we need to capture them, so set off the thing that brings them to Chicago.
Whoa.
So all three of them start. All three of them run to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Angry, smashing, murdering.
Yeah.
Then they cure the monkey, and the monkey helps fight the others.
But he stays big.
But he stays
big. They don't really cure him. He's still
they cure him of evil.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
But there's a pill for that.
Yes. And they deliver the pill in the evil scientist, which then the monkey eats and then gets cured. And you're just like,
Wow.
Straight up murder cure. Nice.
I really thought they were going to put it up his butt.
You were smiling in a way that made me think it was going that way.
Yeah, exactly. They were going to fly a plane into his butt.
Right, or a helicopter.
Yeah.
This movie's super weird because it is in no way for kids. It is uber violent.
Who's the target audience? Who remembers Rampage? Like, there haven't been more versions of that.
The people who really like the Battleship movie is the target audience.
Like, yeah, but at least Battleship, like, I feel kids have played. Like, yeah. I don't think you could go to any playground ute and, like, be like, hey, Rampage.
Like, it was in the arcades. That was where it had its biggest, and then it was ported from arcades to some consoles, Super Nintendo.
Yeah, there's been other versions of it, though. I think like, the most recent one came out like a couple years ago.
It was on SNES and Genesis, and now it's like an iOS game. Like, you download it from the App Store.
Right. There you go.
But either
Rampage,
way,
like, it's an iOS game.
Yeah, talking about Sega selling stuff off, like, this is Konami being like, hey, we have a...
Was it a Midway?
Which is Konami now.
Oh, okay. Fucking Konami. They're the worst.
No, they're not. They're the best. They made Blades of Steel.
Castlevania.
No, but they are now the worst because they just make, like, Plinko games or whatever, and that's it, and it's over.
Everyone gets old, Keith.
They don't make video games, arguably, anymore. They just make, like, gachapon games.
But they made some of the best, and we let them get to this level.
I mean, by all accounts, they just did that to themselves. Imagine you have, like... Hideo Kojima on the payroll, and you're like, get out of here, Hideo. And you're like, all the dude does is print, like, million sellers. Like, they're weird, but, like, he's never had a flop. Like,
yeah.
And you're like, get out. We're not interested in the games you're making. And he's like, did I do something wrong? And they were like, you didn't make gachapon games. And he's like, that's, like, basically what happened, right?
Everything about this movie is confusing. And the fact that it succeeds in an entertainment level is bizarre.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like it's Fast and the Furious with monsters, right?
It's exactly like, that. Like, it's the reason I like Fast and the Furious movies is the same reason I like Rampage. It's a dumb movie that makes its own rules and then sticks by them until everything is exploding.
Is there going to be a sequel? Is there a post-credit sequence?
There is no way there is a sequel. No. The amount of death that happens in this movie leaves no chance for a sequel.
See, like, you say that, but, like, I immediately am like, they're on the moon. They punch the moon out of the sky. And they punch the moon into planet Earth. You're not dreaming big enough.
They do swerves. Mm-hmm. They introduce characters, and you're like, this is the badass military man who's going to take over and bring us the genetic material we need to clone these monsters. Oh,
smash.
He's fucking dead. And he was like a Hollywood actor, and you're just like a big name, Joe Mantegna. Straight up murder him. He gets eaten by a wolf.
So this is one of a couple of movies that did really badly for The Rock in the last
four years
or something.
There's no way this movie
it might have, but it might have been one of those weird secret like global hits, right? Like how Fantastic Four made $1 gazillion overseas.
Not a gazillion.
I mean, okay. Yeah. I'm not saying. I'll look it up.
Yep.
Rampage.
Box Office Mojo.
Box Office. It did fine.
How much did it cost to make?
Cost $120 million to make.
That's a lot of money.
It made $428. It did okay.
It did okay.
It's unreal.
I cannot imagine them saying, we've got a script for Rampage.
Let's
spend $120 million.
But look, $100 million like domestic, mm-hmm. $327 million worldwide.
Yeah, like it
like,
looks...
It's The Rock is in there and there's monsters punching things. That plays real well overseas. Like,
not going to lie, the destruction looks great. Yeah. Like it was... The CGI was good. The direction of the destruction was good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you've seen a lot of like monster movies where it's shaky cam and ground level. Like, mm-hmm. No, they do this high... They put The Rock in a helicopter as the three monsters get to the city, And he does nothing for 15 minutes but slowly watch them going, oh, damn. Oh, no. Oh, no. They're smashing. What do we do? And you're like, man, that's terrible writing. But it shows you the rampage with good camera angles so you can witness them
blowing shit up.
You're looking at you, like, Pirates of the Caribbean Kraken
that's
scene.
That's good.
Yeah.
You never got to see the Kraken.
Lost World Jurassic Park? Where are we at here?
Man. I don't even know.
Positive about this kind of, although it's crappy, it did it well and you had fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
I mean, it also seems like by our various other criteria, succeeded.
Yeah.
Succeeded on being a big monster movie where the monster smashed everything. Who would win in a fight, the Rampage monsters or the robot jocks?
Oh, probably the Rampage monsters. Oh. They are really powered up. They're not as.
What about the last phase Russian spider robot jocks?
Yeah, no, those guys are way too slow for the Rampage monsters. Mm. They're not big like kaiju. Mm-hmm. I think they're like 20, 25 feet tall.
Hmm. In the game, like really, like the game, you're like a bit or four story tall at most. Like you're only usually punching like one story at a time, right?
Yeah,
but like they're throwing cars at helicopters and very agile, bopping around from one building to the other. I'm looking at like the Baywatch area.
Where was that?
Oh, no, maybe a little bit higher than that.
Number?
Pitch Perfect 2, 150, 140.
Oh, yeah.
Higher.
I'm going up.
I mean,
Suicide Squad, Hellboy.
God, Suicide Squad was a disaster. Hellboy was pretty rough, too. I did your go back and rewatch it and feel sad.
Yeah. Right? Ooh.
It sounds potentially above those.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, no. Like,
not
this is
not
one
much
of those,
higher.
This is one of those ones where, like, it's good for what it was.
Yeah.
And then it ends up way high on the list, and we're like, wait, what did we do?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I'm saying, but that sounds like the right zone. Because, like, those movies were, like, I still think Suicide Squad was fine. And it's too high, but I'm like, it was fun.
Yeah.
I feel that you're in the right area.
Yeah, I would put it right between Warm Bodies and Hellboy. All
right.
Right
there, the 141.
Mm-hmm. Is it time?
Think it is.
Is it time? It's time. It's time. It's Vader time.
Huh. That's a good segue.
Vader time?
We're looking at the Mount Rushmore.
Swords.
Mm-hmm.
Of
bad guys
swords.
With swords. Okay, so, Scott, you went first. Do you last time?
Sure.
John, do you have like a four that you're very confident in that you'd like to open?
I have three that I feel real good about and one that I'm like, I don't know if I can back it up, but we're going to see. So
do we want to have read someone off the four? Or do we want to like
no.
say what?
We'll go one at a time because I think we're all going to have like versions of two of them. So
you can start.
You
off.
Want me to start? I'm just going to start it off. Mm-hmm. I think Excalibur is on the list.
Without a doubt.
There are very few named swords in Western culture. Excalibur transcends Arthurian legend, goes into modern films. It has that keep coming back into the pop culture. There's like our culture does not have a lot of mythology that is shared, but Arthurian legends are kind of one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the George Washington.
It's kind of George Washington.
It's got to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazier than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like Excalibur, when you say that, like it's there, is because it's also it's such a pop culture monstrosity that it's in other pop culture. Like the Excalibur as a legendary sword exists mm-hmm. within Marvel Comics.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. it also exists within Doctor Who. Like in Doctor Who, they find Excalibur. It exists within
G.I. Joe. It exists in the G.I. Joe universe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's mm-hmm. not just like it's a legend that we know. It's like it's such like god tier legend that it's in other. Versus, like it's in
D&D. There must be a D&D Excalibur.
No, I don't know. Nothing named Excalibur. The closest you might get to is a Holy Avenger, but even then, I think it's a bit of a stretch. I don't think there's a single Excalibur.
Mm-hmm.
Movie after movie after movie.
Some of them called Excalibur.
Monty Python. Yeah. Monty Python and the Holy Grail doesn't exist. Well, like Excalibur is there. He's like my sword is Excalibur.
The Lady of.
It's Luke. Not really about that, but
in shimmer,
in 2019, Rosmer. Hellboy. Hellboy is Excalibur mm-hmm. is a thing there. Like it's
Disney Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Yeah. With the shape changing witch battle at the end, it was great. Okay, so Excalibur was an easy hit.
Excalibur is a huge lock.
How do we go, George?
So do you want to
somebody else go number two?
All right, I can.
Sure.
I in Excalibur, just touching on Excalibur before we jump over to the next one,
yeah.
I'd put other, like, mythical or long fantasy historical things into it. Runners up to that category, I tucked in the Vorpal Blade and Elric's Stormbringer.
Nice. Do you know what his other sword was called?
No.
Mournblade. Stormbringer and Mournblade.
Yeah. As like runners up to that Excalibur slot.
I had an honorable mention for the Sword of Martin.
Ooh. From Redwall?
Yeah, from Redwall.
I like it.
Wielded by Martin the Warrior. That was an honorable mention in the mythic sword. My other honorable mention in that area was Sting. For Bilbo. Did not make my list, but was like something I thought about, like famous swords. The other one I wanted to check, I guess Jono would only be the only person who sort of knew about this in terms of, I was thinking about when we did Dracula's, how you thought about Strahd. I feel that there are some people that would, if we were a different group of people, that would probably put Frostmourne on the mountain of...
The World of Warcraft sword for Arthas, whatever?
I feel like... I do not think that is worthy of the thing, but I was like, but if we were all like WoW players, I was like, because apparently that's a big deal for WoW players.
Here's the key thing, I think, that we haven't discussed this totally, but maybe it's worth just pausing on it. If like, your thing is a subset of the thing that it comes from, it's not enough. Right? The only people who would know about Frostmourne are WoW players. Right?
Yeah.
The meme of Frostmourne is not beyond World of Warcraft. Whereas for Excalibur, it most certainly is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But that's stuff like Longclaw and Needle also went into that
discussion
where they're fine, they're cool, but they're not the...
Do you want me to do the next one? I'll go again.
Sure.
You just did more on Excalibur? Okay, so what's your next one?
So, my next one is Masamune and Muramasa, who were not actual swords. Those were the swordsmiths of Japanese legend.
So I have...
Touch up on it, but where I'm going to keep going.
I have a lot about this, so go.
Okay, so the reason I'm selecting these two is the intense cultural outreach of the Japanese sword crafting arts and sword play in general. And these two are, although they were not swords, they were swordsmiths who were actually real. And one of them was a teacher, and one of them was the student. And the student was Muramasa, and he went kind of... He was like the bad rogue student trying to surpass
and subsequently,
the teacher.
As Blades of Legend, that's the evil blade.
Correct. So now, well, here's the thing. In their legends, they never named their swords after themselves. So we're familiar with Muramasa and Masamune from Final Fantasy, but their swords, they made a bunch of them each. So here's an example story from the Muramasa legends. Okay, so they both get asked to craft the best sword that they can, and they do. And then they show up, and they each present their sword at the same time to a Buddhist priest. Masamune presents his blade, and it is called the Tender Hands.
Aww.
And he places it into the river with the sharp end pointing up. And Muramasa shows up with his called 10,000 Cold Nights.
Ooh.
How awesome is that? And he puts it in the river, and then drifting down the river are a bunch of things. So a leaf drifts down, and the 10,000 Cold Nights cuts the leaf, and then a fish goes by and it cuts the fish, and then the river goes by and it cuts the river, and the wind goes by and it cuts the wind. And Masamune, man, this is a really long story. So then Muramasa says, Muramasa says, my blade cuts everything. It is the best, blah, blah, blah. Masamune puts his down, and the leaf comes by and it cuts the leaf, and then the fish goes by and it doesn't cut the fish, and the wind goes by and it doesn't cut the wind, and the river goes by and it doesn't cut the river. And the Buddhist priest comes over and he says, well, you know, this blade, Muramasa's, yours is terrible, and it can cut anything, and nobody should have that power. And the blade of Masamune is so sharp that it knows not to cut the innocent. So the wind and the river and the fish are innocent, and so they're not cut by the thing. Anyway, the legends of all of this, but like of the like evil student and the wise teacher, you know, there's like that stuff goes into play. So
I took a different approach to get to the Masamune. I put the Masamune specifically, and then I more specifically selected the Honjo Masamune.
That was the one presented to
Tokugawa. One of the real swords that he made, that was representative of the Tokugawa shogunate in the Edo era for like 200 years, was the sword that apparently was the best of his real-world swords.
Yeah.
And then I believe, like, subsequently... Like, remember how we talked about, like, is the book Dracula more important than the film Dracula?
Right.
I was like, in the realm of book Dracula, but then also about this sword, the Honjo Masamune, is a missing sword. It is a lost sword.
Really?
In current time. It was... So check this out. It was... I got to get the right dates here. It was kept under, like, held by the Japanese government as a Japanese national treasure in 1939. Like, up until... So this is recent, that it became a lost sword now. Under the United States occupation at the end of World War II, all production of Nihinto with edges were banned, except under police and government permanent. Apparently, surviving member of the Tokugawa shogunate, Tokugawa Yamasa, gave the Hanjo Masamune and 14 other swords to a police station at Majiro in December 1945. In 1946, January the following year, the Majuro police gave these swords to a man identified as, this is in air quotes, Sergeant Coldy Beemore, largely believed to have been a garbled phonetic spelling of someone's name.
And he just took off with
of the Foreign Liquidations Commission of the Army Forces Western Pacific. Subsequent people trying to track down the Hanjo Masamune have learned that there are no records of this person existing or working for that group of people. Mm-hmm. And the Hanjo Masamune is considered by many to be the most important missing Japanese sword, and its current location remains unknown.
I like it.
So I went the factual route of the Masamune legend, mm-hmm. being the most real world legendary Masamune sword.
I still
ended up on Masamune, but I was like, I think that one. Also, just and I pulled these numbers. So
these are 800 years old, right? He was operating at the end of the 1200s, start of the 1300s.
Yeah.
So 700 year old swords.
Specifically, Masamune pops up all over the place, mm-hmm. but it features in just about every single solitary Final Fantasy specifically,
yep.
and many other Squaresoft games.
Yep.
So the Final Fantasy saga has grossed over $20 billion, like inflation adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe has grossed $22 billion. So, like, Final Fantasy is, like, on par with the MCU. And this sword features in all of them and is also the one that is wielded by Sephiroth. Is
also called the Masamune.
Yeah, so that was I put the Masamune up there. I chose the Hanjo one, and I was like, and all of its lineage, and I would put it over the Buster Sword because it's just...
Absolutely.
I think
Hanjo Masamune. How do you
I like it. I have nothing on my list that can compare to it.
Okay.
So I'm not going to argue or debate it because I don't like. I have other swords that I think would go on Rushmore,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but nothing comparable.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to have to get to the list and be like, do any of the other swords push it down?
Okay.
Sure.
I have a twist that I bet you guys don't have, and that you're going to be like, oh, yeah.
Is it the Sword of Damocles?
It is not.
Okay, because I have the Sword of Damocles.
That's pretty good. That was my number four there. That I want to do. And I also, along with the Sword of Damocles, I have the Sword of Justice.
Ooh.
That is like the Lady Justice that is in all the courthouses across all of Western civilization. Mm-hmm. Thematically, it goes beyond just swords.
So,
what do you think?
Here's my issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
That was I briefly toyed with, because I was like looking for like famous sword wielders.
Okay.
And here's my... is I was like, the Sword of Justice is more about the lady. And this is where I falter also on the Sword of Damocles,
mm-hmm.
where I was like, it's about the like wielder and the setting more than the sword.
The Sword of Damocles? Isn't it more a literary term?
Yeah, but the Sword of Damocles is based on the legend of Dionysus, who Damocles wanted all of his power, and then Dionysus was like, do you want to sit upon my throne? And he said, sure. But then to reference what sitting on the throne actually is, he had a sword suspended over the throne, suspended by a single... thread of horsehair to represent the fact that, like, while you're on the throne, you're also always
in
like
any moment it could fall.
At any moment you're about to die. So that is the legend that inspired the literary device, which mm-hmm. is like the undoing of a person in power.
Pretty good.
So
what do you think?
But I was like floating on that same. The Sword of Damocles I feel is more associated with the guy, so it kind of floated onto my list.
Mm-hmm.
The Sword of Justice I had similar problems with those two things, which is I was like they're more about the stuff.
Yeah. It's not about the sword.
And if you
so
showed
much.
If you showed Lady Liberty, or
not Lady Liberty, Justice.
Justice is blind. Yeah. Britain, that would be the not the focus of.
It would
what
not.
Going
you
on.
Wouldn't get. You wouldn't get that character if you just showed the sword.
Yeah. So I also that's also where I landed on Damocles over that because I was like it's only one half of the equation
mm-hmm.
because it's like the sword and the scales. I was like so without the scales. It's just the sword. So I was like you're missing the point. Whereas that's why the Sword of Damocles did make my list.
Mm-hmm.
Which was because I was like, it functions like
on
its symbology functions on its own, and then I was like, also not a lot of swords I think get to you know be literary devices, like with having their own kind of legend as like a they do have a legend as a sword, so it was like that was also why the Sword of Damocles bumped out Occam's Razor.
Unless the like swords are in generically sharper than pens,
Jesus.
You know.
So yeah, Sword of Damocles to me is a strong contender personally.
Okay. What do you got?
I'm just gonna throw. Darth Vader's lightsaber out there.
That's my fourth.
Yeah.
I thought about lightsabers, and I was like, man, Luke's, is it the blue one? Is it the green one? Like, what? Which one is the lightsaber? I was like, no, it's totally Vader's
but
red lightsaber.
None of them are bigger than Star Wars.
No, but I cannot think of a single person that I have ever met that hasn't at some point gone...
Okay. So, and, but then you say it's Darth Vader's that they're ring and not the generic lightsaber?
Absolutely. It's
so Vader's
because that red light that lights up a room is the image of the lightsaber.
Hmm. Yeah, Vader's slow igniting red lightsaber I think is probably the like
iconic.
And the fact that it's been in 7 movies.
And
his,
I mean
his saber.
And basically the movies are about him.
I mean, yeah, Star Wars is about Darth Vader.
Okay,
so that and this is where I had a very similar issue, which
even
I was like,
even the most recent trilogy has characters looking at Vader's mask, going, "What do I do?"
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's it. But yeah, that's it. Like the lightsaber, I feel is like a stronger pull. But like, it's which one do you?
I don't think you need to do one. I think you could say the lightsaber.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you end up with like Sam Jackson's purple one, and those are dumb.
Okay, but then you're allowed to understand.
That's like saying it's a little bit like saying scimitars.
Well, you haven't gotten my number one, and when you get it, so but the
athletes.
The thing though is when you say just the lightsaber, you're also kind of getting the like surrounding mythology that is attached to it.
The Kyber like crystals and the quest to
but also the like own. It is an elegant weapon, you know, like in a time of darkness, it is. A symbol of the people who fight for good.
I mean, but right? or evil though.
Or evil. Like, but, you know,
that right. That's what I'm saying is because I was like, I really struggled with lightsaber, like as a general concept because it's basically saying sword, like it's just laser sword, mm-hmm. like and I don't think laser sword is a strong enough pull to get on the mountain. Whereas I was like Darth Vader's sword, I think is one of the most like iconic weapons.
Think of this: the best scene, scene in Rogue One begins with a dark corridor and a red laser sword showing up.
That's right. So the movie was only memorable because of 4 minutes of fan service at the end.
It's enough to save an otherwise unremarkable
it's
movie.
In
and of itself, that material device is enough to make you go, "I've been here for 2 hours, and now, whoa."
The other big thing is. About, and I mean, and I guess I got tough on Mount Rushmore because maybe it's rock. So it's like, I don't know. Like, I could easily identify the hilt of Vader's lightsaber. But I'm just saying, but in general, though.
Just put a couple of kyber crystals in there and have it glow forever.
But it's one of those things. No, but it's just one of those things also where it is
what
rare.
There's a light at the top of PVM that spins over our city.
Yeah, no,
nonstop.
I'm into it. It's a giant freaking crystal on a mountain. It glows but it is all the time.
But it is like so. The other thing, the reason why Vader did get an edge for me though, is because it's extremely rare to me anyway that like a villain, you could go to anybody who is not a Star Wars fan and ask them like, and what weapon does that villain use? And you're like, it's a red freaking lightsaber.
Okay.
Like, do you know what I mean? Whereas it's like other villains with like trademark weapons and stuff, it becomes like a nerd thing to know their favorite weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you're like, this is someone you do not need to be a nerd. You could say, this is one of the greatest villains of all time in movie history. What is his weapon? It is that thing, and I could identify it. Like, you could pick it out without you don't need Vader holding it to know that it's Vader's weapon.
I guess.
So
it's
that was
just a red lightsword.
I understand
That's it. I don't think the hilt is more recognizable one over the other.
Not just the hilt, the sword.
Yeah, the whole sword.
I guess.
A red lightsaber with a black and silver hilt, whatever. Right. Like you would I'm just saying, like, you could show that in a void and your mom would probably say that's Darth
Vader's
weapon.
But if they
weapon.
Had never heard of Star Wars, they would
who
not
is this
get
person
it.
You're talking about?
Okay, but there are people who've never heard of Arthurian legend who have heard of Excalibur. There are people who have never heard of Masamune.
There are people who have never watched Star Wars who know.
What? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why I would say the lightsaber, because they would not identify it as Vader's.
And if you say, who holds the red lightsaber, they'll be like, oh, Darth Vader. They will know.
But no, but then they've heard of Star Wars.
They've never seen it.
But who has not heard of Star Wars?
Okay.
That's the question. Yeah. Is like, Vader holding a red lightsaber is an image, I feel, that transcends the film series. Anyway.
Okay. That's, so a good contender.
Yeah.
Lightsabers in general probably deserve somewhere, some proximity to it.
I put in that category honorable mentions the Ebony Blade from Marvel's The Black Knight, the super vampiric evil soul sword, and the Sword of Destiny from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Hmm. So John, also, who's your
my twist number one?
Who's your twist?
Here we go, guys. The rapier. Okay, the rapier won at swords. The rapier has been in continuous use for 500 years. It was developed in Spain to be a dueling weapon. Mm-hmm. And since that time, literally every day, tens of thousands of people wake up and they go and they practice. Mm-hmm. There are more sword fighters right now than there were in the Middle Ages because it's a sport that people practice all over the freaking world and go in competitions with. Mm-hmm. You can't see any of these weapons that we're discussing being actually used day to day with the exception of the rapier. And if you expand the rapier also to be dueling swords, which is like not an unfair stretch because they're the swords that are still in use, you also include the cutlass and the saber, and so you also include all pirate battles because all of that are essentially part of the tradition of dueling and fanciness. When you bring in, yeah, absolutely.
Well, why don't we just expand it to swords then?
No, because the rapier is something special. It's when you go and you look at the Princess Bride, you don't know what his sword is, but it's a rapier, a dueling weapon.
So I understand what you're saying.
Yep.
I disagree with it because that's being like my choice for the Mount Rushmore of presidents is
George
the
Washington.
The title of president.
No.
Like
every president who's ever been president has been the president.
But I'm not saying every president. I'm excluding all of the
sure. Okay, hang on. So I'm going to say that my choice for the actual Mount Rushmore of presidents are white presidents. The most effective presidents we've ever had.
Hey,
most of government has happened under white presidents on Mount Rushmore. There's only been an 8-year period where they were using some other president.
I think like, it's a very dangerous precedent.
You know what I mean? Like it's just like
you're talking about when we were doing Dracula's, we were doing categories in there. Didn't
sure,
have
but
to
we
be
didn't
a
land on
character.
We didn't land on anyone.
Well, maybe there wasn't a category that made a lot of sense. I think that there are a lot of swords that are
we could have
swords.
Said World of Darkness, and that would
yeah,
have been,
and that would have been okay. If you thought that the vampires of World of Darkness were more of a cultural touchpoint than any other vampire unit,
I don't think that.
I wouldn't go for it. I would have
shouted you down if you would have said the World of Darkness vampires.
Good. Well, that's because it's a bad choice. In this one, rapiers have more cultural relevance than any of the stuff we're talking about. People don't actually run around and engage with this stuff in a way.
Your point, I don't think that they do. Because I don't believe that an average person can differentiate a rapier from a saber from a cutlass. I think that you like could line them up and people wouldn't name them.
I bet you they would.
I mean, I feel that
anybody with even a passing knowledge of the Olympics or of like watched any of the Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Well, they would know, but I'm just saying. You understand what I'm saying? Where they were like to identify the difference of the swords. Like you couldn't necessarily rapiers don't slash. And whatever, as much as
so
cutlasses.
You know, because you fenced.
I mean, like
yes,
you fenced.
Did we all fence?
Why would you not say the katana? Because it's in more college dorm rooms than any other sword.
Exactly, that's
well,
it.
Well, I think the rapier is bigger than the katana.
I
think there are more katanas in the United States than there are rapiers.
I don't think that's true.
I think that's definitely true.
I don't think you've looked at it.
So
or imagery of katanas. Katanas physically. If I go to you know where I. You know how I can go and buy a rapier? Like, probably with some difficulty. You know where I could buy, like, a bunch of katanas? Chinatown. Like, just right now. I could just go and get a bunch of them.
Get one
right and then away. I'm just also...
Okay, but, like, so I went to a fencing class last year where the guys show up with, like, two bags that each have 40 rapiers in it.
I mean, I could say that about baseball bats, too, because I hang out with a bunch of people
that we're not talking
baseballs.
About sports weapons. Yeah. We're talking about swords.
No, but like you're saying you went to the place where they use rapiers and there was a guy who had a bunch of rapiers. Like, if I went to the softball field,
right,
I would see more softball bats than rapiers.
But that was into your response about going to an Asian sword store and I'm being just surprised that there's a lot of Asian swords there. I was pointing out the hilariousness of what you said.
No, but I'm just saying, but I don't know where to go buy a rapier right now, whereas I know multiple stores
well,
where
any
I could
sporting
buy
goods store.
Katanas. I feel that katanas are more culturally relevant than rapiers. I understand not in combat, not in true honest to goodness combat.
Not in practice, but in terms of
yeah, exactly, that's it.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a strong element and I feel that maybe we need to eventually do like a Mount Rushmore of just like weapons as weapon types.
Uh-huh.
or something. Martial weaponry. But like
Well, let me throw something up there just to, like, give it a different flavor and as power. Okay. He-Man's sword of power.
Okay, I have again, the power. Not bigger than He-Man.
Again.
Maybe yelling, I have the power, but only by a slight teeny tiny margin. And it was 2 years of a TV show, and then it was gone.
A TV show that is closing in on 40 years old.
I will tell you.
You can say, by the power of Grayskull, and get the callback, I have the power.
Maybe.
So the thing,
among people our age.
Again,
if you were standing on a metro platform, and you shouted out, by the power of Grayskull.
It would have to be men in our age category who are going to get it. Literally nobody else gives a shit.
So that was my other, the other, like I said, the criteria, like my four, and I feel that we're like Masamune and Excalibur, I feel are solid locks.
Sure.
My four were Masamune, Excalibur, the Sword of Damocles, and Darth Vader's lightsaber. That was my four.
I don't think it's bigger than Star Wars.
But the thing was, and again, like I've like, and Sword of Damocles kind of ended up, because it is bigger than Damocles. Mm-hmm. Like, because it became a literary...
Well, let me get into John's argument about it not being bigger than He-Man.
Yeah.
Shortly after He-Man, the Masters of the Universe, came out, the copycats began to come out in force. So you go right away to Thundercats and the Sword of Omens, Thundercats.
See, but I back all of that out. I removed the Sword of Power from my list for my number five, which was the Master Sword, because the Master Sword predates the power Sword of Power, and that's what that sword is a sword that gets really powerful when I hold it up. So He-Man stole from Link in terms of powerful sword thing, kind of, and then I also bumped the Master Sword up because I believe it is
There's no way The Legend of Zelda is before 1981. What are you talking about?
1982? You're right. I think Legend
Plus,
of Zelda.
Plus, it's obviously Conan ripoff, the animation also, that's there.
Yeah, well, then you get the Sword of Omens, you get Black Star with the Star Sword and the Power Star.
Yeah.
You get, these are like almost identical shows.
But this is what I'm talking about, categories. I think a better argument that you're making there would be the Saturday Morning Sword. That could be any of those cartoon things and the touch point that they had. Like, that's a good argument.
She-Ra has the same sword, which is a direct spin-off, but it's a direct spin-off because of He-Man, and she gets a sword because the sword of power is a thing. You even get Conan the Barbarian, who predates He-Man, and He-Man is like a pastiche of Conan that evolves into the Star Sword, the Star Metal Sword in Conan the Adventurer, because...
Right.
He has to go back and steal from He-Man to become relevant to the audience that He-Man had.
Right.
I did an experiment though on yesterday where, like I said, I threw out Sword of Omens, I threw out Black Star Sword, I threw out that, and I did hang on. Like I said, my number five was Master Sword because of the fact that you could put those swords out, and I feel that in geek culture people could be like Master Sword. Without the man holding it. Point, like, you know what I mean? You said, like, bigger than?
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying Master Sword is bigger than The Legend of Zelda. I'm just saying that, like, you don't need to have your guy holding it to identify it. The only one that kind of comes close, because the logo is right there, is the Sword of Omens. But then I don't think everybody can tell that it's the Sword of Omens.
I don't think anybody would
They
name
just
it.
Know it's the Thundercat sword. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know. I think He-Man's sword is a weird enough profile that people would recognize it.
Over Master Sword? I think that a lot of people could point out Master Sword, like...
Master Sword I put in my video game category, and it does not make my... It goes in the honorable mentions of my video
game. It hit my top five. Yeah.
So my video game character category, I put Cloud's Buster Sword there because, oh my god, do people make those out of tinfoil and cardboard?
It's super cool.
Like,
just the Masamune beats it.
Like nothing else.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen someone get out a bunch of Alcan 25-foot tinfoil and make a Masamune. In the way that people
But that's because the Buster Sword is like, it's Buster three swords. Lines. Like, you don't need this. Yeah. Like, the Masamune has a curve to it. That's hard.
And I put it ahead of Link's Master Sword from Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
I put it ahead of the Arbiter Energy Sword from Halo, which that's a lot.
That's
all
one.
Over the place.
Another one that was...
And Soul Edge. And
the
Edge. We talked about the Soul Edge, and you were like, which one? It's a shape-shifting sword, and they're all...
See, I ruled out the Soul Edge on the same basis that I'm ruling out rapiers. Because I was like, it is
it's
many
always the
weapons.
Soul Edge. Just depending on the ending of the game, it changes to something else.
Yeah,
but it's still
or depending
the soul
on
edge.
Who's wielding it. Yeah. See, I feel that rapiers is too broad of a category, John. I know exactly where you're coming from.
The Arbiter Energy Sword is another one of those. Like, if I took the outline of it and put it on a T-shirt, people who knew what it was could recognize it just from the outline.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Halo is like a
bigger than we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the Madden. Of,
but let's say, but Frostborn would be a bigger deal.
Over the Halo?
The Halo? No way.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Player base, bro. Player base and longevity. It's
anyone can get the energy sword.
Sure, but I'm saying, but in terms of like legend and mythic things,
if you were to put just the outline on a T-shirt and show it to a bunch of video game geeks, who would say wow, and who would say Halo more?
Generic icy two-handed sword versus
That circle.
The profile.
Alright, so we need to lock this up.
Yeah, I feel like I'm okay with lightsaber and Vader. If you guys are like adamant that it has to be Vader's, that's fine.
And just in terms of like the, I think you can't downplay the importance of like cinema. Like he's way up there on the American Film Institute's like number one villain and all that stuff. And it is like beyond a shadow of a doubt his trademark weapon.
It's all their trademark weapons. They all look the same. It's just red. There's nothing special.
Which
about
was
it.
A big deal. It
Why?
Was
Why? It's not a big deal in the movies.
Okay, listen. There's only one of them. There's literally only one person has a straight up and downsy redsy sword. What's his name?
Dooku has a little
Dooku
twist.
Dooku holds
in the thing.
A little twist Who and cares? He fights it like a little fancy fence. Like Maul holds it as a staff. Kylo's has like a hilt.
So
like a
number four.
I like Sword of Damocles. That's my, like...
But that's it. It just, you say the Sword of Damocles.
Which is a sword that it comes from a legend that it was so... The legend itself became, like, it transcended swordom.
But not English. Whereas the rapier transcends all nationalities over history.
Yeah, but none of them have the power of Grayskull.
But I believe...
They do not.
That the Sword of Damocles as a literary device probably does transcend English. Like, I feel that if you look it up in another language or whatever, there'll be, like, the English word for this literary effect of that, like, power, you know, is your undoing is called the Sword of Damocles.
Hmm. I don't even think a lot of English majors would be able to pull that out.
Really?
Yeah.
English majors, sure. Maybe, like, you know, university.
It's up there with,
maybe
like...
Maybe not 101
the sort of, right. Like, I'm saying the Sword of Damocles, to me, is, like, up there with, like, Deus Ex Machina in terms of, like, it's a thing that happens, and it's not about...
I promise you, when we get to gun, the Mount Rushmore of guns, Chekhov's gun is not going on the mountain.
It should be, though. Yeah. You know, in terms of, like, cultural impact of the weapon...
I would put
like,
Chekhov's phaser ahead of Chekhov's gun. Right?
I'm willing to let go of the Sword
Unless
of Damocles.
Unless the God of War wielded the Sword of Damocles.
I'm pretty sure he did. Like,
so, is this a tie? Or do we...
No, we gotta figure this out. Fast. We got the three.
You said... And then what is the fourth?
The fourth one that I had on my list was Sword of Justice. But I'm okay with Sword of Damocles taking it as a literary swords. You could even say literary swords, because then you would also have, I guess it's just sharper than a pen.
Well, the pen being sharper than the sword. But I was like, but on my Sword of Damocles...
Less
like,
mighty than pen, right. Sword.
Well, that's what I was saying. On my Sword of Damocles trip, I was just sort of like Occam's Razor, and I was like, not a sword.
Not a sword.
But I was like, blade? Like, and yes, Chekhov's gun is definitely on gun.
It's not. It's not happening.
But it is. Scott really doesn't seem to like this literary device as sword.
God, I'm just picturing how we carve that into a mountain.
It's a metaphorical carve.
Because it is also a legendary sword. It is the sword that Dionysus used to teach Damocles a lesson. But then that legend of itself, like, influenced, like, fiction. You know what I mean? Like, that was where I was like, it isn't just a phrase, like a Deus Ex Machina or whatever, is that there was a legend there that was so kind of like, I guess... potent that it became a term for.
Yeah, but you've never made one. You've never pretended you had the Sword of Damocles.
But that's not what this is about. This is about
the
cultural impact of swords.
Wrapping the Christmas gifts, and you got that paper tube.
I mean, I also never did that with Excalibur.
Yes, you did. You pulled it out of the couch cushions.
I definitely did it with a He-Man sword. I definitely had the power.
Yeah. In that case, if we're ruling out Sword of Damocles, which I am staunchly against. And I guess we're ruling out rapier because it's too broad.
It's funny.
Broadsword.
I mean, it's actually not right.
the thinnest sword is too broad.
It then becomes, in my mind, Master Sword versus the Sword of Power.
All right.
No, that's if we're ruling out the Sword of Damocles, because apparently...
But no, like, I mean, I get it. You guys don't like the Buster Sword, so fine.
It's just, like I said, it's one game versus the Master Munis in every game. Mm-hmm. And wielded by Sephiroth. Like...
Who loses to Cloud in the end? Oh, fuck you.
No, but does he? He's coming back.
Are you complaining about the Master Muni?
No.
Okay. Yeah, because
there's so much more to it than just being Sephiroth's sword.
I get it.
In addition to all of that stuff, it's also Sephiroth's sword. Like, that's the weird throw-in on the Master Muni, is that it's also wielded by Sephiroth. Power Sword or Master Sword? I don't know.
I'm stronger on the Sword of Justice / Sword of Damocles than I am on either of those. But it would have to be the Master Sword, because there's so many games. It's been culturally relevant to successive generations of gamers, right? Like, many gamers played the GameCube Link as their first game, as their first NGA.
Yeah, like, I honestly feel that taking a look at like Jaime's kids or whatever else. They know the Master Sword. They don't know the Sword of Power.
Because Jaime has a Master Sword he made out of...
No, but they've also played... guess what? Those games are still very popular. When was the last time He-Man was a very popular thing? The only reason a kid knows what the Sword of Power is today is because his dad shows him. Yeah. Which is certainly a powerful link to people our age, but that is the same link that the kids are like... Yo.
That's my dad's old stupid shit.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Whereas you can play...
When He-Man and the Masters of the Universe premieres this year, it's going to be... It's going
to
be big.
Well, then we'll get them to go back to the mountain and chisel a better sword on.
But then they've had other shots at the cartoon and stuff, and nothing, I don't think, touches Legend of Zelda games. Yeah. Like,
okay.
Like, Pete...
I'm convinced. Okay. I'm conceding to logical arguments here. Mm-hmm.
So, we have Excalibur.
Just don't let this power go to your head.
The Hanjo.
Because once it does...
The Hondo Masamune.
Masamune.
Hanjo.
Hanjo. It's Hanjo, but yeah.
Yeah.
Vader's lightsaber, and then the Master Sword.
Yeah.
While I concede to this, I want you not to abuse this power, because when you're sitting on that throne, you gotta look up.
God damn it, Scott!
I still think, guys, there's tens of thousands of people every day who pick up a rapier. Ain't none of that happens with any of these other things.
I'm not even convinced that...
Tens of thousands... That is not true at all. Like, you're saying that any given time there are not, like, let's say, like, at least 20 to 30,000 people playing Legend of Zelda.
I think there were more...
You know what I mean?
Okay, but I'm talking about... And that number... Okay, maybe it's diminishing, obviously, but... Over the last 500 years, there have been schools of people learning to use these things continuously since rapiers were around.
I think at any given moment in this country, there are more kids using hockey sticks as swords than there are people wielding rapiers.
I don't know about that, man.
Like I said, cultural impact of a weapon in total, rapier is way up there. But then, I mean, maybe bayonet beats it, though, because it's like a sword on a gun. So then you're like, oh, you're far away. Bang.
And if we're going to gun swords, that brings us back to Final Fantasy VIII.
Incidentally, Final Fantasy VIII, when I was doing my Masamune research, no Masamune in there because the gun sword. Like, it goes 7, skips 8, and then 9, 10 have Masamunes. But, like, 8 does not have a Masamune, presumably because they were like, you know what's cooler than the Masamune? A gun sword. Boy, were they wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was that the 90s?
I think that... Did I rip the only...
Was there any business?
I was like, were there any other honorable mentions that you wanted to throw out? I will tell you the one sword that jumped out as me, and again, just Katana, was... Katana.
Like, you could have said that. That would have been...
Katana was one, but specifically because I thought about, like, I think one of my favorite swords in pop culture doesn't necessarily warrant a Mount Rushmore or anywhere near it. Was Vicious's katana in Cowboy Bebop, in terms of just like a sword wielder. And then I also kind of from that jumped ahead to, I can't remember the name of it or whatever, but the dude from Ninja Scroll. The fact that like his katana, you know, but I was like, but then I kept kind of landing on, they're just katanas.
Yeah. Kusanagi from Usagi Yojimbo, the grass cutter. Like, that's a great story, but it's not.
It's just a katana. Yeah, exactly. That was kind of where, like,
It's a magical katana. It's just
another katana.
It hasn't bled out.
Another one that came, that again quickly got stomped out by Sword of Power and stuff like that, was the whatever the Power Ranger sword was.
There were too many Power Rangers.
Yeah, there was a lot, but it was like the one that the Red Ranger had, like, in my mind, because I was just like, before I like embarked into this at all, I just like thought of characters wielding swords from stuff that, like, jumped out. That was my, like...
The Voltron sword always is in my head. I'm sure that it has a name.
I was trying to picture Randolph Thor's sword, but I couldn't pull the name without looking it up, so I didn't... I was like,
Randall
that's not
Thor?
A... From Wheel of Time.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I have 17 books of that series. Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of the sword, so I was like, meh.
None of us have even gotten into the... Like, you did mention, not Glamdring, but Sting. But there's also Glamdring, which was...
Narsil. Gandalf's,
and, Narsil might have been a good call, because, like, that... Yep. It's a big... It's big, but it's, like, still a subset of the Lord of the Rings.
Narsil and Sting went head-to-head, and they both canceled
each other. I also floated briefly around the Iron Throne.
All the swords.
Well, no, but because and that was a thing where you're like, again, you could show it in a void, and a lot of people would know that that is the Iron Throne.
Totally.
And it is a seat made out of swords. Like, you don't need to have a character sitting on it or whatever to have that, like, and I was like, it's not a sword.
Yeah.
But it is made out of swords. But yeah, that was in my mix.
We can have it, like, instead of park benches around the Mount Rushmore.
Iron Thrones. Iron Thrones of the Sword that didn't make the Mount Rushmore. Was there anything weird that, like, you guys thought up that was, like, that what you were, like, thought and then immediately, like, dismissed? Like,
I was pretty happy with my Arbiter sword pull.
That's a good
energy sword. Mm-hmm. I thought that was something that a lot of people have played with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Guys, we did swords. Hang on. So I don't know. We haven't assigned a thing. We might not necessarily get to it, but do we want to assign another Mount Rushmore? Because we don't have a best movie ever to talk about because we didn't assign one.
Right.
I don't know. No. Thoughts.
We're in an hour and a half, man.
But we don't have anything to, you know, promote the next epi on. You have nothing to look forward to.
Sure.
It'll be the episode where we come up with a Mount Rushmore and another.
There you go. Tune in next time.
I got it. Totally the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Huh?
Robots.
Mount Rushmore of robots. Whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
Of robots?
Yep.
Okay, but wait.
Ooh.
But there needs to be a going in position. Like,
they have to be unique robots. I don't want to hear all the robot drones from iRobot or
whatever. Okay,
but what if I said Borg? You know, they're all robots.
You would have to say Borg Queen or Why? Hugh or Locutus.
So anyway, my question, though, is, are we talking about robots that do not have a pilot?
Robots don't have pilots.
Well, yeah, but then where do, like, Robotech, like, Veritex and stuff, are they not robots?
No, they don't operate by themselves.
Okay.
That's good. They have to be autonomous.
Intelligent.
It's fair. Now,
or autonomous.
Yeah.
They could be programmed.
Yeah.
So, then what about...
HAL counts, the lifter from Aliens doesn't.
Sure. Where do Avas fit? Because they also have souls.
But not they aren't conscious and can't act independently.
But except when
they're really pissed off.
I was like, except when they can. But I would argue. But then they're alive because there's a bio component in Avas.
Same with Borg.
There's a soul.
Yeah,
it's tricky.
Okay, if you can argue it, I don't think
cyborgs.
No cyborgs, then there's no Borg.
Right. Yeah. We're talking androids, robots,
totally non-biological. Yeah.
All right.
And no supercomputers. Have to walk.
Number two, Chappie. Number three, Chappie. Number four, Chappie.
Tune in next week for RDS does Chappie.
Yay!
Hi. Thanks for sticking around to the very end of this show. That means you're our number one fan. As our number one fan, maybe you're wondering a way that you can show your support for this. We've set up a few ways, and the boys are going to tell you about it now.
If you like this show, you might know other people that like this show, or maybe they'll like some of the other stuff that we're doing on the website. If that's the case, you can tell them all about it using all of the social networks like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of those. Or you could just, you know, send people links directly to the website. Or if you live in a world without the internet and you only listen to podcasts, you can tell people about it with your human mouth. There's other ways we could support us, John.
If your interest in supporting us extends to the financial section, you might consider patreon.com/9to5cc. If you go there, you can get perks like early content, you can get your questions answered on the air, and you could get extra art.
We've been doing this show for a long time, so we kind of know what we're doing. Not really.
9to5.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.